Hi, this is Amelia Antonetti, and you are on Awaken Nation.
A huge shift is taking place on planet Earth. People seem to be waking up. Tired of the way things used to be, they are creating something brand new and changing the world we live in. My name is Brad Zolas, and I get to sit down with the next generation of idea makers, the disruptors, and the game changers. Everyday people, just like you and me, from all over, who are doing amazing things. Welcome to Awakened Nation.
Amelia, welcome to the show.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Good. Well, first, we have to give a shout out to our good friend, Randall Kenneth Jones of The Jones Show. He got us together. He can't say enough about you. And gee, I wonder why. If you just Google some of the things you've done. I want you as our guest I want our audience to really get exposed to your work, because the people who listen to my show, they are people who like to do the self-help. They like to do a deep dive into great, extraordinary conversations. And you are the perfect guest here on Awakened Nation. So welcome to the show.
I love the title. Like, I mean, this, the whole word awakened is like, just gets my energy going. Right. And yes, I love my work. I've been, in my field for 35 years, and I'm a behaviorist, and that kind of stumps people, because they're like, okay, you mean a therapist? I'm like, oh no. Let me be clear, right? A therapist, you know, will hold your hand and guide you through a journey at your pace. A behaviorist mirrors your current thought state, right? So I'm literally just your mirror to show you what it is that you think and you believe. And then there's only two choices, right? So what you think and believe right now will hold you in today, and today will just repeat. Or you change the destination, right? So if you say, I don't want to change anything about me, then you'll be in Groundhog Day, and you can't have a destination beyond Groundhog Day. But if you're like, no, this is where I want to go, then you have to change your current thought of today.
How dare you? buckle up, ladies and gentlemen, because if you haven't figured it out, we're going into a deep dive on behavior. What keeps you stuck? There's a great question I have to launch all this. I'm going to read your bio real quick, but she's one of the co-authors of Designing Genius. I love this book. It's the tagline is "Success is an inward journey." Yeah, so this is part of your shadow work, ladies and gentlemen. Amelia, let me read this, is one of the most sought after human behavior and strategic advisor experts in the world. Yeah, that got me right away, that human behavioral expert. I studied DISC, by the way, D-I-S-C, behavioral communications, but this is way beyond this.
Yeah, I'm fun at dinner parties.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would be hanging out with you because I'm the weirdo. She has appeared as a regular business and behavior expert on the Oprah Winfrey Show, the Steve Harvey Show, and Dr. Phil. She has built or advised on over $2 billion in sales for companies and high-profile clients such as Steve Harvey, Mike Tyson, Listerine Strips, Sharper Image, Cold Stone Creamery. Ooh, did you get free samples? And George Foreman, and more. You know, we'll get more into this, but first of all, here in the beginning of the book, you say something that's pretty powerful. You talk about our behavior is either protecting or defending something in our lives. And you say that sometimes it's just one behavior that kind of is a dichotomy or you're fighting to keep. So let's start with that. You know, what can we let go, or how do we even spot it?
Yeah. So when you really kind of just lean in for a second on the concept, right? Most people are defending their position, right? Mm. That's their natural default. I mean, they are just triggered. If you say the sky is blue, they want to go, well, you know, it's kind of aqua, right? To defend what they think and what they believe. And a lot of that is fear-based media, that if you think anything different, the whole house of cards is going to come down, right? Oh my goodness, the whole thing is going to come kit and caboodle. And so when you start to understand that many people are just defending their position, it allows you to have the room not to internalize it, that it has anything to do with you. I think that, you know, one of my mission is to heal unintended pain, because so often the interactions with humans causes us great pain, and we don't mean to cause the pain, but we're still responsible for the pain that we cause. And a lot of the times it's because we have this false belief that I must somehow defend my position versus understanding that I can listen. I can agree that that's what you think. I can agree that that's your story, and it has nothing to do with me. And so we hop on other people's side so often, we think that that's healthy.
Wow. It is. You know, I see a lot of arguments, and my girlfriend's really into eutaptics. And when we first started dating, she got me to, I'm not, I've done a lot of work on myself. So deflecting is not something that comes natural anymore. So I don't deflect, but I sit there when she accuses me of something or says, you know, you need to change this. I go, maybe you're right. You know, so, yeah. You know, what you said is very powerful, but where do you go from there? How do you identify your defense mechanism? I guess you would call it.
Well, you know, it's the power of the pause, right? It's being comfortable in the silence because people think that in order to, right. Cause as humans, like, so one of the baseline understanding to be human is we all have a need to belong. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter where you were born, doesn't matter your financial status. We all have this need to belong. However, we never learned the tools to actually belong in a healthy relationship. Most of us are repeating high school habits and behaviors over and over and over again, and really not understanding why things don't start to feel more connected, more rich, more clear. Right. We wonder why, because we've never taught, right? We've completely removed life skills. I mean, that's one of the big things about Designing Genius is we're in 28 colleges now and moving into school districts to put life skills back into our schools so that people understand that you're 100% in control of how you think and how you feel. That's you on your side. Nobody can make you feel anything. And so we start from some really basic behavioral tools. One of the very first ones that I teach is that it's impossible to have an argument if you don't participate. It's impossible, right? And so many people talk about, right? We talk about strain and recovery. We talk about capacity. But one of the first things is, you know, people like, if I could just get all the aggravation out of my life. And I'm like, I can help you do that in 30 seconds. Don't participate. Don't participate. Right. And so when you start to understand that you have to be the willing participant in order to feel anything, so you can just as easily, if you decide that you want to have an argument, I can absolutely sit and I can hold space for you. And I can say, it really looks intense over there. What can I do for you? What? How can I help? Because you look angry. Right. And for you to be able to go, I just need to vent. No problem. Yeah. I'll hold space. Or I need to come to some type of solution. Okay, I'll listen and then I'll provide some perspective, right? But these communication starters of, here's what I'm witnessing and I care about you. So I want to serve you, right? Not engage in an argument, because that's not serving our relationship. Serving our relationship is me understanding, what do you need from me right now? And if you don't know, go, would you like me to listen? Would you like feedback? Do you need to walk around in the house? You know, like what is it that you actually need? Because now we're moving towards a healthy dialogue, right? Because it's perfectly fine for you to say, you know what? I don't know what I need right now. Let me give you space. No problem. Let me just give you some space. And when you're ready, I just want to love on you. You just let me know what I can do and not engage. But those are just life skills. Those are just little life skills that become part of practice. And so I try to ask people to slow down in any type of interaction and ask yourself, what's the end game? Because is what you're about to say going to serve you or serve the relationship? Most of the time, people have very petty comments that are underlining issues that are not the issue, right? It's noise. It's noise. And again, petty normally means a petty response versus going, ouch, but ouch, which that's a life skill, right? So if you say something, you know, well, you always do that. I can go, oh, ow, I'm sorry. Is this something we need to talk about?
It's kind of like in a relationship when resentment builds up and builds up, and then all of a sudden there's just these little back and forth jabs. I love what you said about you don't have to participate. Here we are in the day and age of social media where somebody, you know, posts something that is there to get a rise and we're like, I got to go in there. We don't have to participate.
No.
Wait a minute.
And there's such power in that, right? Yeah. There's such power in saying, is this something I want to give any energy to? Or is my energy best served somewhere else?
Right.
Right. And it's, you know, there's this false energy exchange that when something feels triggering or it's charged, that we lean in. And the reality is you want to lean out. Keep it on there. That's all on your side. Looks like some heavy baggage going on over there. Happy to help you put it down, but I'm not going to carry it for you.
I'm always astounded at when somebody, you know, goes to tell me off, or they don't want to hang out with me, or I find out years later they had this opinion of me that ain't me. I don't know how they came up with this, but they were projecting their own stuff. And I just, how do you deal with that? I mean, that, you know, I've had people lie about me and backstab me, and I'm like, where did you get this information that is in your head?
And right. And again, that's like, is it worth you defending your position? Because the reality is, in your circle, and we call it your genius circle, right? Those people, no matter what information is, you know, falls upon them, in a healthy relationship, people give you the space to ask questions and go, hey, listen, I heard this, and I would love, if you're comfortable, to have some dialogue, you know, because I'm wondering like what kind of happened or what went on, or is there something that I can participate, or like, how would you like me to handle it? That's you know, an open dialogue to say, here's something I'd like to discuss. Are you willing or unwilling to discuss the subject? And sometimes you have to be okay with somebody saying, you know what, I'm really not willing to discuss that. Okay, I'll respect your boundaries. And you have to ask yourself, if not knowing anything more than you know, can you still participate in the same manner within the relationship? Because you have a responsibility to say, well, without this information, I'm going to have a difficult time, right, continuing the relationship, or to be able to go, you know what, it really doesn't even matter because it's not my experience, right? And that's kind of when you hear the hearsay and all that kind of stuff, is most of the time, it has nothing to do with you. Right. So in these scenarios that you're talking about, which is somebody is projecting or transferring something because you're a trigger for something else, that's all on their side. And I've had many, many relationships where I'm like, listen, I think we need to take a break. This isn't feeling healthy to either one of us. I want to honor and love you. And so I'm going to step back. And when you feel right, time has come to revisit this, my door's open. But what I won't do is I won't participate in unhealthy behavior. And this is starting to feel unhealthy to me. I wish you no ill will, but I'm going to remove my energy because I need to stay the course on my values, my minimal standard, right? My minimal viable standard. And this is something that people start learning as they dig into behavior, is that you have to have a minimum for everything, a minimum. This is a minimum requirement to be a friend. This is a minimum requirement to be in business with me. This is a minimum requirement. And for me being able to list for you what that means, and for you to say whether that works for you or not, because sometimes my minimum does not work for you. And that's okay, because I can cheer from you from afar. We don't have to be friends, right? That's this false belief that we have to be friends. No, right. We don't have to be friends. We can be colleagues. I can be your cheerleader. I can want the very best for you, right? But we're not in sync on where we're going, or we're not in sync with our expectations. And that's a tough conversation for people to have. And I have to always kind of like have it openly to say, I am not average. I'm not average. I don't live an average life. I don't have average standards for myself. I don't have average standards for my friends. And so you need to understand that my expectations are a little bit more than what you may be used to. And if that doesn't work for you, or that causes you anxiety, or that triggers you, I can hold space and lovingly say, if you need me, give me a holler, but I'm going to continue my course, right? Because I cannot allow myself to go up and down and up and down, right? To keep changing my standards, right? To kind of accommodate my environment. I create my own environment and then attract those that are tracking at the same pace as me.
This is incredibly powerful. I want to say boom when you talk about this stuff, because I keep thinking of something that stuck out. I think it was 25 years ago. I read Awaken the Giant Within by Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
And he said, change your standards and you change your life. And I think this can be intimidating for some people because they don't want to let go of these dysfunctional friendships, let's say, or they don't want to move into a place that might feel lonely in the beginning, because, you know, when you're at the top of the mountain, there aren't a lot of people up there. So you changing is really, really hard. And I love what you're saying about this, because this is not taught, as you say, and it's almost like, it's just pure common sense when it comes to human technology. Wouldn't you say, how did you discover all this?
Well, you know, it's been 35 years, right? And so I have been a business owner, a CEO of some very large companies over my career, mm-hmm. and then worked on lots of other people's companies. And so a business is a bunch of individual people, right? You have to be a master of people in order to run a healthy organization. And so I wanted to be a CEO that really understood each individual's value system based on their lens, not mine, not what the company thought, not what I thought. I wanted to know, what did they think? What did they believe? And what did they desire individually within our organization? And then help them move to what they say that they wanted. Because the more you can serve people to get them on the journey that's created for them, you have a relationship for life. Yeah. Right. And so I wanted to change the paradox to not make it about me, to make it about them. And the only way to make it about them is if I understood truly about human behavior, right? What actually is human behavior? Why does it exist? And how do we lean in to either start, stop, or swap our behavior to create the momentum towards what it is that we want? And so all of the stuff in Designing Genius, right, takes little nuggets to help you understand what you're currently thinking, what you say you want. And then on those two points saying, well, if this is what you say you want to go, then here's the thoughts that have to change today. But if you don't want to change any of those behaviors, then you have to change your destination, because you'll never get there, right? Because everything comes to you based on the frequency that you put off. So I kind of always say it's like a house, right? So there's a certain frequency in the basement, and then there's a frequency on the first level, second level, third level, fourth level. And if you are vibrating at a basement frequency, then you only see the opportunities in the basement. You won't see the opportunities at the third level because you haven't done your work. And when you start to realize that you are just a byproduct of what you think, what you believe, and how you show up. And so if you want something different, you have to learn how to show up differently. And here's where the rubber meets the road. Your current self has to die in order to become your future self. And this is where, when you talked about loneliness, loneliness in many, many cases, not all, but in many cases, the loneliness is the you that you are shedding. There's a loneliness of, wow, I don't think or believe that anymore. Wow, I'm moving away from what was known and moving into my future, right? There's a loneliness anytime you part with anything. And the loneliness is not a negative feeling. Loneliness can also be a sign of tremendous growth.
That's powerful. I hope everybody's taking notes, because you're laying down truth bombs. Boom. Pick up the book, Designing Genius. And here's what I loved about it. You have a step system kind of in here. And when you buy the book, folks, you get a QR code in here. I don't know if you can see that. This QR code helps you get access to tools and games to play with your family. Also, Number one strategy to make any of your goals a reality. Ooh, that's intriguing. And a $50 coupon for the Designing Genius course. So pick up the book. There's a QR code. There's much more than just reading the book. There is, you know, a workbook, a guidebook to help you achieve your goals and make some changes in your life. So let's dig in a little further. I took notes. I did my homework. I'm that kind of.
I love that. I so much. I so appreciate it.
You have a 5-step process. Let's talk about that a little bit because, you know, I've understood the difference now after, you know, 15 years of professional speaking. I was a CMO of a company I founded and took public on NASDAQ, and I was in the same field of ideology that you were. I wanted a company where the corporate culture, and this is back in the 90s, they didn't know what corporate culture was. And so all we wanted was the most creativity out of people because we were a design firm. Mm. And I wanted everybody to have this extraordinary experience. So me and my other business partner, he became my CEO. He was very big on therapy and interacting with employees and things like that. So what we created was such a dynamic environment. We didn't even know this, but Arthur Anderson was our accounting firm. And they came in and they did a secret poll with all our employees. They came back to us and they gave us the Arthur Anderson Enterprise Award in New York City for fostering innovation amongst our employees, which was workforce culture.
That is awesome.
Yes. And we did not know we were creating anything special. We just wanted loyalty, the most creative drive from every one of our employees, and we protected them all the time. Oh, and by the way, if a client came in and said, "My God, that website looks amazing," I would pull the team out of, you know, the bullpen and say, these are the people who took care of and made your brand sing. And let me tell you, I don't know how this happened, but I found out they have alumni get-togethers of my employees right now to this day, K2 alumni parties. And to me, it was intuitive. I love the fact that you said this. And that you made that your goal. You owned Soapworks, am I right? Is that mm-hmm. one of the companies? Yeah. No. So you understand that you cannot get ahead. It isn't about you. It's about the people you hire because they bring.
You can't have a life without people. You can't have a business without people. You can't have a relationship without people. Everything comes down to people. And what baffles me, because I speak to a lot of, you know, CEOs and corporations and C-suite, mm-hmm. and I'm like, okay, how many classes have you taken on leadership? A million. How many have you taken on management? A million. How many behavior classes have you taken? Zero.
Right.
Zero. So I'm like, okay, so if people are the most important asset, but yet you don't understand how people come to be, how in the world can you put them within an or you can't understand one-on-one, let alone one-on-many. And it just doesn't make any sense. And what happens is we try very hard. We've got great intentions and we create an enormous amount of pain by hurting people in our experimenting of trying to figure out who we are. Right. Yeah. And so when I'm trying to find myself out, I'm hurting you in the process because I don't know how to keep it onto my side. Right. And so this is such a needed, right. And so, especially when you talk about creativity, which is one of my favorite things ever, people mm-hmm. don't understand you cannot be creative if you don't feel safe. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Because if you're not safe, then you're not going to create because creating is a series of failures to get to the creation, right? Like if you ever actually watched an artist, my daughter's like, I'm like, what are you doing? I don't know yet. What do you mean you don't know yet? Because there's a lot of like freak note, they don't know yet, right? But they're okay of the process of getting it wrong before they get it right. Yeah. But if you don't feel safe, if you're a perfectionist, that means you're on the opposite side of creativity. And we build businesses, we build relationships with our husbands, our wives, that there's no room for them to fail.
Right.
Right. It's doesn't even when you say it out loud in relationships and you say, I want somebody to be funny and my friend and adventurous and safe and make a good income and be in smoke and shape and be happy go lucky, but yet be able to be a bulldog to get things done. When we go through this list and you keep going, who are you fooling? Like, when did we decide that one person was going to be the source of everything for us? It's impossible to put that expectation. And then we wonder why relationships fail, because it wasn't realistic to begin with, right? That's why people don't understand that humans are meant to be in a community, into a tribe. And within that community, you get other sources of things, right? There was a matriarch in the community, right? There was different people in the community that fed our soul, not this one person that we're going to hold accountable for all of our needs. And I'm like, well, if you can't give your need to yourself, what makes you think another human can?
Right.
It's craziness when you say it out loud. And then people go, yeah, I never really thought about it. Because I'm like, well, where's the roadmap? And that's why writing Designing Genius, right? It's taking you chapter to chapter to discover about yourself, what truly is your identity, what you really believe, what matters to you, and where it's rooted. Because half the time that I take somebody through this process or they're going through the course, what they want, where it's rooted, they come back and go, oh my goodness, I actually never even wanted that. My father wanted that. My grandparents want, somebody else want. I'm like, you're living somebody else's life and wondering why it's so difficult, because it's not yours. It was never your dream to begin with.
All I have to say is, wow. Or as Christopher Walken would say, wow. You do. Wow.
Oh my God. I love him.
I used to get paid to imitate him. I have to say, wow, because I had a very similar story. I walked out onto my front grassy knoll when I lived on Staten Island. My business was failing. I was freaking out. I barely had enough money. I had a wife and two kids. And I'm like, this is the early 90s or mid 90s. And I just looked up at the stars in the sky. And this is how I talk to God. You know, it's under the majesty of the, you know, the stars. And I just, I said, why am I going through this? And I was in tears. It's 1 o'clock in the morning, full moon, it's cold. And a dump truck drives by in the opposite direction that it's supposed to go. And I'm up in a very suburban area of New York City, you know, one of the boroughs. And there's a giant Z on, or spray painted on the side, like we're talking 20 feet tall. Z is the end, you know, the alpha, the omega, all this. And I realized my head trash was being carted away. Like I got this epiphany. Almost like that epiphany you had in the boardroom your book, none of these people are serving you. And I just stood there and I burst out laughing, and another epiphany came. And that was this: I had devoted my entire life to proving my father wrong simply because I was an artist, and my dad was a doctor, and he said, you know, you're never going to be able to survive or make a living and blah, blah, blah. 6 months after that, we went public on NASDAQ. My salary was $120,000 a year, and I had $4 million in common stock.
It's amazing.
Boom. And it was a shift of mindset. Now, it didn't happen overnight. Once I had that epiphany, I realized, okay, I got to trust in this new sort of paradigm that I'm carrying in my brain now and act on it from that moment on. Yep. So this is why I love the work you do, because I've done this interpersonal work by myself in the dark sometimes, gestalt therapy to group therapy tactics to you name it. So I love this work. And I just got to throw this in. I'm going to send you the paperback 10th anniversary edition of my book, Liquid Leadership, because Yay! I have several chapters in there where you need an environment to tell the truth, even if it's against the CEO, and without an environment where it's safe to be creative and make mistakes, there is no innovation.
Uh-huh. And so in my company, right, they are required to fail every day.
Oh, nice.
Fail report. Every day that people tell me what it is that they failed. And that is my way of being able to reprogram the response that people expect from failure, right? I'm like, oh my God, I'm so excited. How did you screw up? Tell me what happened. What did you learn? What can I learn? right? To understand that what is defined as failure is merely a directional guide. That's all it is a directional guide.
Right.
And if you can suck the information out of it, the value is exponential. And when you can get a team that supports each other by failing, right, and failing as together as the collective, but also then masterminding what we can extract from that, the greatest innovation happens. The greatest innovation happens because they feel, right, even, right, come to neutral to share, oh my gosh, I have totally messed this up. And you have to breed that type of environment if you're looking to innovate or create. And as humans, we are designed by primary curiosity. Yeah. Without curiosity, we're miserable. So when people tell me, oh my gosh, I can't, like, is this it? I get this all, is this it? I cannot imagine spending 20 more years in this life. And I'm like, where's your curiosity? When have you pushed play? When have you, right, gone out with the intention to just let it all go? I mean, you hear it all the time with highly successful people, how they go on these little mini adventures to push their brain outside of, right, what they don't know. And you need to, you've got to continue to push those boundaries. You know, I try, right, every year I plan something. I have my friends now do it for me, something that I absolutely positively do not want to do. I do not want to do at all. And I lean into it, right? We have a game that we play where everybody puts things in the hat, you know? And so I just, 2 weekends ago, I pulled one out that my daughter put in there randomly. And she was like, I want my mom to rollerblade. I'm like, what? Have you met me? I'm like, I am going to break something. I'm like, are you kidding? But it forced me, like, outside of my comfort zone, you know, to go, okay, how am I going to lean into this? But the more you practice being uncomfortable, the more you raise opportunity, because you're comfortable being uncomfortable. Well, what is opportunity? Opportunity is something that's new. Well, you're going to run from opportunity if you're not comfortable in the uncomfortable, right? So you have to condition yourself, right? Practice over time to just be comfortable in uncomfortable. And especially, like, again, you talk about being on the road. You know, I'm out on the road. Everything you can possibly think of that happens is going to happen. And I got to go, oh, well, I guess I'm meant to be here. I guess that's what I'm meant to be. What can I learn from this environment? I'm like, hey, are you on the same plane that I'm on tonight? Let's go grab dinner. Who are you? What do you do? Like, you just have to be, like, you roll with it, right? Yeah. Because you choose the response. I can get angry, but how does that serve me? Like, how is that even going to do anything for me? There's no food there for me. And so the response of going, there must be something here that I just don't know. So let me be curious to explore it. Like, what's around me, right? Because it's a little, like, tap on the shoulder to say, look here. And I'm like, okay, let me look here. Who's here, right? That's the curiosity that changes the way you feel. But you're in control of it. You're in control of the response.
That is so true. I always try to do something, you know, that most people, like my girlfriend, she looks at me and she's like, wow, you know, because I like to go climb mountains, or I like to do.
Me too. I've climbed Kilimanjaro. I love to climb. I'll climb anything.
Me too. When I was living in Las Vegas, I went to Red Rock every weekend up there in Calico Basin. I just love to challenge myself, and it would be 110 degrees and I don't care. 2 years ago, I went out to the desert in California and did ayahuasca. A friend of mine brought me, you know, because for years he had asked me, he was studying to be a shaman. And he said, hey, you want to come along? We're going to have some soldiers there that are going to work through their PTSD. And for years I said no. And then I finally said, you know what? I feel this strong inner nudge to do it. And yeah, I was scared. But the healing that came out of it was so worth it. And so I'm on board with what you're talking about. No pushback here. Are we covering those the five-step process? Do you have that? Do you want to talk about that?
You can just pick one. We can lean in, you know, just pick one that, you know, you kind of like the feel for, and, you know, we can just kind of decode it. I mean, there's, you know, so much, like I said, Patricia's, my co-author, is the one who really leaned in about writing the book. She was like, I really think you should write a book. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not writing a book. I'm not doing that. But I was like, okay, if we're going to do this, I want to make sure it's not like a regular book, right? I was like, I want to put these behavioral tools in. I want people to be forced to learn at the end of the chapter. Like, I really wanted it to be an experience that people could then share with others.
Let's talk about the rules of the game. We go to public high school in the United States. Everything is about memorization, and there is not one course on how to be successful in life, how to go out there and choose your path. Some people are J-O-B, some people are entrepreneurs. I personally have been rejected and kicked out of some universities simply because I don't have the bachelor degree, but I have all this business background. And they just don't want to teach it because it seems to go against the grain of actually what the teachers and the university professors know. They don't know how to do this. Yeah. So let's talk about this. What are the rules of the game and how come they're left out of our lives in most cases?
It's fascinating to me. And again, I think this is part of the reason why I do what I do is we have never been taught how to think. Actually how to think. And part of the process of learning how to think is fact finding, right, around you about, well, what is the rules of the game that you just stepped into, right? And so I try to give people the scenario that if you have mastered, right, the rules of football and you try to play basketball, doesn't matter how good you are at that sport, you're going to fail miserably at basketball because the rules are different.
Right.
And we jump in to all kinds of situations without understanding what the rules of the game are. And for some reason, somebody told us that we could change the rules of the game before we've established any credibility in the game whatsoever. Right. Which is insanity. Right.
Right.
And so I think that one of the strongest lessons that I learned early on. So I'm the only girl out of a pack of brothers. And I remember playing in the backyard with my brothers. I literally got dogpiled, broke three of my ribs. And I came in the house crying. And my dad was like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Are you crying?" And I'm like, "It's just not fair. It's just not fair, right? I'm a girl. They should somehow behave differently because I was a girl." And my father said, "You see that kitchen? You can go in that kitchen with your mother and your aunt and your grandmother and stay in there and you can whine all day long. But if you want to play with your brothers, you have to learn the rules of the game. You can't change the rules until you become the master of the game. And you can't, you're crying." And so it started this concept for me to be able to say, okay, they're bigger, right? They're heavier. Right? Way stronger than I am. I'm fifth from the youngest, right? So I was like, but what can I do? And I'm like, I can outsmart them. Mm-hmm. You're not going to outthink me. And so I worked on speed and intelligence so that I could play with my brothers. And so when we talk about the rules of the game, you have to understand what are the rules, right, of the company, of the team, of the person that you're interacting with, right? So if one of my rules, right, I grew up in a very Italian family, right? Off the boat, Italian family. So one of the rules in our household is we give each other shit all the time, constantly, right? We don't mean anything harmful from it, but if you were not Italian and you were just observing, you would think we were fighting. We're not fighting. That is just our rules of engagement, right? I give it to you and I'm going to give it right back. But if you don't establish, hey, this is kind of how my family functions, right? Then somebody's coming in feeling a whole lot of hurt when they don't understand this is just the rules of this game, right? And so often we come together and we don't start by establishing the baseline. So like you were saying earlier, the baseline for you was loyalty. Well, mm-hmm. What does that mean to you? How would that show up? How would I know if you were being loyal? What would I see, hear, or feel? And right. Those are the things that you need to do to establish that base of the rules so you know how to participate or if you even want to, because there's a lot of games that are being played I just choose not to participate in. Looks interesting. Not my cup of tea. Not my thing. And so when people like to then push on my side, but going, well, you're never going to be successful if you don't learn that, I'll find a different way. I'll find a different way. That game I'm not playing. And I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Well, I lived in New York for 35 years. I'm used to Italian families.
Yeah, but I think that that's what happens when people come to visit New York, yeah. Right? They're like, oh my God, they're mean, they're cold, they're this, they're whatever. I'm like, oh my right. gosh, New Yorkers are one of the most friendly people ever, right? They're just direct and they move very fast, right? So if right. you're going to walk on the sidewalk, you might want to bear to the left, right? Because they're going right. to come through. But not that they're, but if you stopped a New Yorker, we're very, very friendly, very yep. friendly. And we love our city and we love the diversity of all of our culture and we love the camaraderie. And so there's a lot to love here. But if you're from an area where it moves slower and there's a little bit more kumbaya and politically correct and, you know, all that, yeah. you're going to find it abrasive.
Yeah, it's going to be rough for you. as I sit here and see the Flatiron Building behind you, 23rd and Broadway. Yeah. Yeah. A real New Yorker knows where they're at all yeah. times.
All times, right? All times, right? Yeah.
You know, it's so true because I've had friends come to visit New York City and they would come down from Connecticut. And the first thing out of their mouth was, it's so dirty here. And we're like, what are you talking about? You know, like we didn't notice it. Everybody's piled on top of each other. And there's a saying, and I've talked about this on the show before. Somebody from the difference between a West Coaster and an East Coaster is this, or a New Yorker. Somebody on the West Coast will be really nice to your face, but they won't help you. Okay. But a New Yorker, they might seem nasty or in a hurry, but there's that guy who's on the phone because he's doing a deal on Wall Street. He'll walk down into the subway, help a woman with her baby carriage down the stairs, not think twice about it. And she's like, thank you so much. He's like, hey, anytime. And he takes off. Yeah. That's New Yorkers. Yeah. We'll help you, but we might not be the nicest, you know, yeah. on the outside.
I always, you know, so, and I've lived in California forever, right? California, yeah. I was bi-coastal all the way up to COVID. And so in California, when they're like, hey, stop over for a drink, they don't really mean that.
No, they right? don't.
New Yorker, when you're like, hey, stop over for a drink, they're ringing your doorbell at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, I brought whatever. So it's understanding, right, the rules, right, of what do yeah. things mean. And I think that that's where now that we're more mobile and our younger people are hybrid workers now, that's what's happening. They don't understand how to establish what are the rules that are happening in mm-hmm. this engagement. What's going on? What's the expectation? Yeah. What does that look like? What does that feel like? Because they've just never learned the life skill. And it sets them up to fail. And then they walk around with an enormous amount of hurt, rightfully so, because they don't understand. And so it's creating hurt. And yeah. so these conversations are so easily had. And there's like a whole list that you'll find in the book, right? Of ways to get in and out of conversations that people think are difficult. I'm like, it's right. not difficult when you have the tool.
When you have the tools and you know the rules, you know, like I said before, I studied DISC behavioral, you know, communication style. And it has helped me in the sales game many, many times. But most of it before that was I relied on my intuition. I spent, 30 some odd years trying to figure out this game. And I got my own rules and those rules may not line up. So I recommend everybody pick up Designing Genius because the rules are in there. So you know how to play the game. I want to ask you, do you think this is why people nowadays are getting, and I'm using this word lightly, but triggered over everything because they don't really understand. They've been taught a different set of rules than previous generations have been taught on how to interact and communicate. That's what it looks like to me. It's just a difference in generational styles of how they were taught.
Well, this is where you've got layers of complexity that have happened for people. That's the result is what you talked about. You have to understand that COVID has had long lasting effect on all of us.
Yeah.
And through this time, right, let's just put 2 years as a quick little place up, but within this 2 years, people came into awareness about a lot of things about themselves and their life.
Yeah.
And part of that awareness was, how in the hell did I get here? Right. How did I get here? Because slowly over time, they were sold, right? Like commuting 2 hours of their life was a good idea, right? That like all of these small, right, moving the needle of your minimum standard where they were literally just running to get caught up. And if you looked at a lot of the reports from COVID, right, for a lot of people, it was the first time in their life that they actually sat down to family dinners, was the first time that they've had conversations. People took a hard look at their relationships, what they really, what are they working for? Like a lot of this heavy thought came out during COVID. Well, it hasn't been repaired. People are still, right, very confused on the seriousness and heaviness of this life that they created. Mm-hmm. And they don't know how to move the needle to where they actually want. They're like, this sucks, but how do I change it? Right? How do I change it? And slowly, right, we're being pulled back into a lot of the habits that we feel like we have no choice. And when somebody feels like they have no choice, the resentment is what builds. And so when you're resentful, bitter, angry, and resentful, everything is a trigger. And so my belief as a behaviorist is the people that are the most easiest triggered are the ones that are the farthest away from what actually they want. And that means they either are afraid to speak about what they want, or they don't know how to unwind what is currently the life to get to what I want. And so that's what those triggerings are. The triggerings are really just a yelp of pain, just pain.
Mm. Yeah. You said something very profound, you know, because we see it, you know, in a lot of people who feel marginalized, they're upset. And here's a contradiction that I don't think a lot of people understand. We're finally in an era where these conversations can happen. You know, I used to talk to people about, you know, inclusivity and, you know, you need more diversity and things like this. And they were like, well, why is this a big deal all of a sudden? It's like, well, the conversations were always there. It's just you guys hired a bevy of lawyers to keep those conversations down. And we're not talking about this. And now I'm not saying we're in a safe space. Maybe we are, where those conversations can have the light of day. So I thank you for the work you do. It's phenomenal. How do people get a hold of you if they need to hire you or just participate in Designing Genius, or they want to get the toolkit?
I love hearing from people. So if you, my first name, Amelia, A-M-I-L-Y-A, across any of the social platforms, you're going to bump into me. And I try very hard to, you know, chat back and listen to your comments. If you just go to designinggenius.com, you're going to be able to, you know, see the course there, see some of the work that we do. Yeah. Absolutely. We have a B2C business to consumer and B2B business to business. Head over to Amazon. You can get the book on Amazon very, very easily. And we just want to hear from you. Like we're really here to serve. And if you've got a behavioral trip up and like us to solve it, join the DG community. It's a lot of fun. We meet every week. And that's what we're doing is we're decoding and helping people move through those behavior blockers.
That's powerful. Thank you so much for doing the work you're doing. Folks, get out there. A lot of you may want to, you know, get to know Amelia better. Go on Clubhouse and friend her over there, because I've been in a couple of Clubhouse rooms with you, and your work is so powerful. And I love when people have figured out, you know, how the matrix works, you know, and you really have done it. So thank you so much. Get the book, Designing Genius. Success is an inward journey. I want to shift gears real quick.
Yeah.
In the time we have left. You got Bob Berg, my buddy, Bob Berg.
I love Bob.
Incredible. So talk about that. What did you do? You just asked him, or he's like,
I picked up Go Giver at a very interesting time in my life. And I think I was reluctant in the beginning. I think the book was gifted to me, never got around to it. It's one of those things that somebody kept like talking about it. And I was like, when I read Go Giver, it really changed my perspective about everything. And most importantly, really allowed me to shine the light on myself, right? Because I was like, wait a minute, am I really a go-giver, or am I looking to get something in return? right? Was I that kind of like an eye for an eye kind of thing? Right. And it really, really changed me. And then getting to know Bob, he's just brilliant. I mean, there are certain people who changed the course of how leadership is, you know, what that benchmark is, right?
Right.
And he elevated leadership exponentially. And so part of my work, and really being bold about my work, about like, listen, you know, this is a thing. Behavior is a thing that you have to understand. Like I said, talking about leadership and whatever, taking a behavior class, he really inspired me to bring my work public. You know, I did a lot of my work for many, many, many years, one-on-one, high net worth clients, kind of in the dark, because it's unusual. Right. Are you a therapist? Are you like, how is this important in the business place? I'm like, behavior. I'm like, it's everything. Right. Hello. And so he really gave me the courage, right, to kind of be a salmon swimming upstream. And when, you know, Patricia, again, she was definitely 100%, the book would not have been written without her. When she said, you know, who in my life has been, fundamentally the linchpin of making Amelia and Amelia. And I was like, if there's anybody that I would say it would be beyond an honor, it would be Bob Burke, because I'm a better person because I know him, a better human.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's just one of those people. I mean, I just, you know, and the thing about him is when you're actually in his presence, I kind of feel like maybe I'm in front of like the Dalai Lama or something. He is so focused on you. He is so attentive. His memory is insane about what he really is the benchmark for leadership.
He is. I agree. I met him at a Napoleon Hill Think and Grow Rich Summit, and he was one of the speakers on the first day. And his presence was just phenomenal.
It
really kind of launched my speaking career. I flew out to San Diego and I'm walking through the lobby and I hear this, Brad, and a bunch of speakers drag me over. They had read my bio on the website, I guess. And Bob Burg was wandering through the lobby looking for the spa. And this went on for 20 minutes. It became almost like a comedy bit. He's dressed in his sweats with a bottle of water. And he goes, I'm looking for the spa, you know. And through that weekend, we became friends. And he was on my first season. I asked him, could you be on my show first season? He said, absolutely.
Yeah, and he's just one of those guys. I mean, he is somebody that I think it's impossible to forget him if you've been in his presence. It's just, it's impossible. Well,
he's 6'2", first of all. I'm 5'8", you know. And then the thing that bonded us together is he would purposely do bad impersonations on stage, like he did a Jimmy Stewart. So I did my Christopher Walken when he came off stage. To see Bob Burg bend over laughing uproariously is probably one of the greatest joys of my life.
Yeah.
Because he is in 100%. When he's laughing, he is laughing. Mm-hmm. So to this day, I said, hey, Chris says hello.
And I think that as, you know, as I get older, you know, there are just those moments, those people, those opportunities that come that absolutely, when you look back, you know, transformed who you are.
Yeah, I agree. They're milestones.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they are wrapped up in a singular person.
Yes.
That was that person who helped you up to the next level.
Yeah. And it's having somebody like that. Like, again, anytime I'm questioning my next right move, there isn't a better authentic source than Bob, because he's straight up. Right. And so really just a true blessing, you know. And he does his own mastermind, and he's got all, and I tell people, you absolutely, it's an experience that will change you. You've got, and he's so good on his social and responding. I mean, he's somebody everybody should follow.
Yeah. I literally am shocked at who I have on speed dial. Once I said, I want to be a speaker and wrote a book and all this, and Bob is one of them. You know, I can literally call him up and just say, hey, I got a problem here. And he embodies and lives the go-giver lifestyle.
He really, really, really does. He really does. And that's, you know, when I talk about minimum standard, you know, I try to say, you know, what would Bob do? How would Bob respond? Like how, you know, especially when I'm like overly tired and I feel like, you know, and then I'm like, oh, Bob never would have done that. He would have been so present. Yeah.
We should get, you know, bracelets made, WWBD. What would Bob?
Oh, Bob too.
Yeah. Let's go into the lightning round. I love to ask questions of my guests that help us get to know you better. The first question I'm going to ask, you said this in the book. You said, by nature, I'm a giver. It is easy for me to give to others, but I struggle to ask for help. Are you able to ask for help at this point in your life?
I will still say that I'm not a master of it, right? I'm definitely say that this is always something that I have to come back to. It's one of those life lessons that when I audit myself over and over again, that my giving way out my receiving. And so I have to keep in mind that when I don't receive, I'm denying you the gift of giving, right? I'm actually causing damage. And so I'm trying to be a better receiver and a better person to ask for help. It isn't my natural instinct, right? And so it's going to be something that I think I will always, always, always have to work on.
Let me ask the second question, and that is this. What's your favorite memory?
Ooh, my favorite memory. I think my favorite, you know, my kids are very far apart, like 14 years apart. And so everything about that process changed when I had my daughter, like what, you know, my son and then my daughter. And, you know, they do those sonograms, right? So you can see the picture of the baby inside. And it was incredible to me, like just incredible that when she was born, she looked exactly like that picture. It was this crazy memory for me going, how is that possible? Like, just like her shape of her face, like it looked like her.
Right.
And it was like this kind of like, cause I didn't have that with my son. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I had like a little, like heard his heartbeat and stuff like that, but having this picture that was so real, it like just stopped me in like this wow moment of how crazy technology has gotten. I just was like, wow. And so that memory of her, my daughter's name is Lucia Catena, which in Italian, Lucia means light and Catena means chain. So she's the light of my life and the chain around my heart. And I think that memory, holding this picture that I had for months and then really seeing her, her name just came to be. It just, that's just one of those moments. I knew she was Lucia Catena. I just knew in that moment.
That's a beautiful story. I love that. My third and final question is, you like to challenge yourself every year with something, and your friends usually participate in that. What would be that one challenge that would blow your mind? I mean, really blow your mind.
Challenge for me to face?
Yeah.
I think, you know, on my radar, and I would love to be able to do an interview in Spanish. So I just started, even though I'm older than dirt, going back to, you know, I took Spanish for so many years, but it's like useless. Like I took it for 4 years. I can't do anything with it. And I have so many Latino friends, like I was Latin in another lifetime for sure. And so I've been back, my daughter, obviously my kids speak it. I'm horrible. And I was like, I'm going to learn Spanish and I'm going to do an interview somehow, some way in Spanish without everybody absolutely laughing. And so I think that that's a challenge because people are like, oh, you're too old to really understand a language or whatever. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do this. I want to communicate with my Latin brothers and sisters in their home tongue, their dream language, to connect with them in a way that I can't with English.
It's so true. You know, my ex-wife is from Haiti and she speaks four languages fluently. So Creole, English, Spanish, and French. French is her main language. And she went to a Catholic school on the island down in the Caribbean, and they would not allow them to speak Creole. I'm horrible with languages, but I can muddle through a little bit of French now. But because my brain thinks more in French now, it's hard to switch back to Spanish. I can order food.
That's about it. But those are the things that, you know, I don't listen to the myth about what I can't do. I'm like, I will. It'll be hard. It'll be tough. I'll make a fool of myself, but I'll participate because it's something that's meaningful to me. And, you know, my Latina family is just the best. It's just the best.
They are.
They
know how to live life. That's what it is. You know, I trained in jiu-jitsu and Kenpo for years. And one of my best buddies out of that is Justo Rodriguez. Go to his house and, you know, they live life with gusto, this amazing gusto. And he and I would just laugh and have a good time. You know, the food and the culture.
Oh,
and
yeah, everything. Food. Yeah. I'm all of it. The music. I mean, I'm just.
Pasteles. Yeah. I eat all that stuff. I like the gondolas because it's a better flavor.
Yeah.
Pasteles and coquito at Christmas. Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, reach out, please. Amelia Antonetti, Designing Genius. I love this book, by the way. I'm three quarters of the way through. I'm going to finish it up. It's one of the few, you know, a lot of times I have guests on the show and I skim through and I go, this is a good book. But this, I know, is going to change a lot of my perceptions. I'm a big fan of, if your mind says you can't do it, let's change that and just do it. And if any of you are at that age that I'm at, 60, and you're thinking, okay, I'm going to get ready for retirement, how about you take a step back and try something different instead of just winding down? How about winding up? Yeah. So anyways, Amelia, thank you. Thank you so much. And thanks to Randall Kenneth Jones for introducing us. This has been an extraordinary episode. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I do. And I love Randy. Randy's like my brother. I mean, he is my heart. And we play together all the time. So I will definitely text him and just say, thank you so much for the introduction. All right, I'm dating myself now.
Yeah. A page or fax, you know.
There you go. Like, I can.
How old are you?
I know. My BlackBerry that I still miss. Yes.
Yes. The Palm Pilot. Yeah, there we go.
There you go.
Okay, thank you, boomer.
Thank you so much. So much fun. Thank you so much.
Hey, everybody, tune in next week for another extraordinary guest here on Awakened Nation. We have a phenomenal season 5, and just buckle up. Get ready. Thanks again, Amelia. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for being a big part of the Awakened Nation movement. This is how you can help me and our extraordinary guests. If you guys enjoyed this episode, please share it out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And let's grow this movement by word of mouth. Our success will be because of you. Thank you, and see you next week.